Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. First Down Aaron Rodgers, a.k.a. Moving Packs.
Yo, what up? It's Jeff, a.k.a. Headshot, a.k.a. Glock Turtleneck.
I'm gonna follow that. I got it. Yo, what's up? It's Jin, a.k.a. 你不知道我说什么，所以其实我想说什么都可以。这些鱼好像很好吃，不过吃完会不会肚子饿呢？没人知道。不过希望这两条友仔不会这样玩我啦。Thanks, good night.
God damn. This is the way somebody that's real. Yo.
I'm sure your Cantonese listening audience will really appreciate
that. Yo, I mean, all we're hoping for is that you bring in the Cantonese listening. Like, this week is strictly for Rough Riders.
Yep.
And our Cantonese speaking.
If there's one person that sums up Rough Riders in Cantonese,
that would be you.
It'd be DMX.
I was actually gonna say drag on, but yeah, because I mean, what says like Chinese and Rough Riders like drag on?
That's right. Yeah. First of all, how are you doing?
I'm well, man.
Good.
I'm well.
Thanks for being here.
Yeah. My like physically, mentally, just all around emotionally, relatively stable.
That's good.
I'm gonna dive in.
Okay, right? Do that. Okay. Just for the record, we made salmon with a side of asparagus and couscous. Salmon has paprika on it, and it has garlic on it and salt and pepper and olive oil. But listen, only because the news came out like today that the WHO, the World Health Organization,
said that red meat is basically as bad for you as carcinogens.
So we're just like, we're not gonna like kill Jin today.
It looks amazing.
Okay. Carcinogens.
Hopefully, it tastes all right.
Carcinogens, really?
Yeah.
The whole purpose of this meal was that wordplay moment right there.
It's me and my Iron Solomon.
I ain't gonna talk about your carcinogens. But Jin, you look like a nice piece of cinnamon. Anyways.
So, all right. So where are you living these days?
I am back in New York.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, moved back about 3 years ago now.
Okay.
Welcome. Yeah.
Thank you. Came back prior to that, was living out in China.
Yeah.
In Hong Kong. And really productive, really fruitful out there. But I think the defining moment was when my son was born.
Yeah.
So I have a 3-year-old now.
Whose name is?
Chance.
Right.
Shout out to Chance.
Chance the child.
Exactly. Chance the child, Chance the son, a.k.a. Chance the offspring, a.k.a. Chance the future of, the empire.
Yep.
My empire.
Yeah. Sure.
Not Lucius's empire.
No.
China empire.
That's right.
Yeah. I just realized, I did a research. Every borough in New York City has at least 4 China empires.
Really?
Like 4 takeout restaurants empire.
I was like, is there something I don't know about, like the underground?
But, so shout out to Chance.
Mm-hmm.
And
is he listening?
Could be. Starting him young.
So 3 years old, is he what is that, preschool at this point?
Yeah, he's in pre-K.
And how's that going?
It's going good. You know, he kind of adapted to being away from me and mommy a little smoother than I would have liked.
Mm-hmm. How is it for you and mommy?
First day was tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. First time we dropped him off there. We're watching all the other parents and the kids is clinging onto their legs.
And he doesn't care.
Yeah, I dropped him off and I was like, come, I'll see you later. And he was like, peace, and just ran off into the little toy area. And he's got his little friends now.
Man,
so
he doesn't need you guys.
He doesn't.
Yeah.
He doesn't.
They grow up too fast.
Yeah.
Too fast, too furious.
Yeah.
That's all I'm here for today.
That is. Is that your sole duty today?
I'm just going to be doing like great puns.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
He is growing too fast, too furious.
So
too fast for y'all.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I think a year ago, we were coming back from L.A.
Bingo.
Yeah, man.
Yes.
We were coming back from L.A. And we flew into Newark. And we rarely fly into Newark.
Yeah.
Beautiful
Newark. Newark.
All so I fly beautiful. Into is Newark.
For real?
Yeah.
Yo, no, I love like going into like LaGuardia or JFK. Like Newark, it's just like too far for us.
Mm-hmm.
But we landed. We took a red eye.
Yeah.
We get off the plane.
Well, you
from
haven't
LA.
Slept in
I hadn't.
Days.
So. Because I don't sleep during red eyes. Do you?
I do.
Long flights are okay for you?
Long or short, I sleep.
Really?
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, like, you're also like a shorter guy.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like for me, like I don't, there's no comfortable way to,
you're
to
right.
sleep.
You're right.
But I feel like I do it just because I'm good at sleeping.
Okay.
I mean, on flights is the only time I feel like us as the, elevated challenge, we get to really shine. Because on flights, I'm always looking for like guys that are closer to your stature.
Right.
And I just laugh at them in my, in my own mind.
Well, like, I appreciate
it. The longer the flight, the better.
No, but you're good, like middle seat.
I'm good on any seat, yo. As long as I got that little, you know, that neck pretzel.
Oh yeah, you're good with that.
Once I got my neck pretzel,
so you can just like curl up.
Yep.
Do you do the do you do the eye shade or whatever?
I don't do the eye shade, but 9 out of 10 times on flights, I do wear a hoodie. Yeah. And I just overpull. Yeah, I just overpull.
See, here's where I am on a here's who I am on a red eye. I'm the only one awake, and I can't like put a light on. I can't put a TV on, so I'm just sitting there like. By myself, screwed the entire time.
Creep.
I do. I'm the worst, and I stay awake the entire time. So we get to Newark.
You guys were flying in, right?
Coming in. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I think I was on my way out.
And
might have been.
You were just hanging out in the Newark airport,
slanging my mixtape. That's the place, though. Yo. You're gonna slang mixtapes, but
because okay, there's no one happier than the people getting off of a.
So who
of a red
initiated
eye.
Contact?
You did. You were like, "Yo," you were like, "It's the real," and we were just like. And you were like, yo, it's gin. And we were just like, what the fuck? Like, I really like could have been like hallucinating or something, like getting off that flight. But it was really you. Mm-hmm. You were like, yo, I fuck with what you guys do.
Yeah, early.
And
early
like, too. And you're like, here's my math. And let's like do something at some point. And
we were like, listen, guy, like, sorry. But.
And like any other like hip hop person or, you know, like kind of whether they're, you know, a journalist, an artist. The first thing they said instinctively when I met them was, yeah, I know Miss Info too.
Yo, but you know what though?
That's like the linking. Yeah. Like the linking
I'll say this. We said that too. I was about to say that we did drop the Miss Info thing because it was like, at some point, I never know if people really like fuck with us like that. So I'm just like, all right, well, let me see. Like, let me throw out another friend.
Yeah.
And Miss Info, Minya, has always been a huge proponent of you.
Your whole career.
So like when we talked about you before meeting you.
Yeah.
We were just like, that's awesome. So we wanted to be like, yo, Minya's around. We
so it
would have
been
out.
Really cool is right. If at the airport you was like, you know Miss Info, right? I'd be like, who? Like, who's Minya?
You're like, listen, guys, but do you support independent music?
She's always been, like you said, super supportive, encouraging. And I would say over the years, not that we ever got to really, really build and pick each other's brains, but definitely one of those, you know, quality over quantity type of things.
Yeah,
because
yeah.
In the limited times we did cross paths or did get to interact, it was always only just encouraging words. And, you know, she's in the game for a minute, too.
Yeah. Like, mm-hmm. Were you, even, like, stopping by Hot 97? Like,
when you were on runs? I had my stops here and there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like, when I first got signed and onward, I had a few times going up there, whether it was in the capacity of, you know, the R used to just go everywhere together.
Yeah, yeah, yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like, yo, get up the, you know, get the vets. You know, you got the X and even on them. Yo, get the pups, you know, me. And I mean, at one point, you know, being like the new kid, there were also other artists too that they had just signed or guys that had been on the R, like part of the fold for a while.
Yeah.
And one thing they would do is almost like tradition is just collectively go somewhere, whether it was a radio station, whether it was another studio. And this is where stuff like, you know, legendary Freeway versus Cass type scenarios pop up, right? So I think when I saw you guys at the airport, the first thing that crossed my mind was actually
that you should have brought everybody else from the R.
Yeah, we would have been there, and then, you know, Terminal A, it probably would have been a 2-on-2
holding like a sign.
Me and Drag versus me and Drag versus y'all two. But I was gonna say I have a pretty, it's borderline vague, borderline vivid recollection of my first kind of moment where I was like, "Yo, it's the real." Did you guys ever do? Now, if I'm completely wrong, feel free to just pretend this never happened.
White guys. Yeah,
I know.
Who
yeah.
knows? But it was a skit, and it has something to do with fortune cookies.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was something relating to Fat Joe
there was.
Specifically, too. And then you were like, I wonder what Jin would say about this.
Did something we really say that?
Something in that vein.
Okay,
Either one of you remember?
Yes.
That was like very early on. It took place in this apartment.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
What was the premise of it?
I don't. Oh, you know what?
It was him going in 50 Cent.
Yeah, because it was the elephant in the sand. Time. Mm-hmm. I don't remember why we did a fortune cookie thing, but we
I
did have mayo.
The year of the elephant, though, wasn't it?
Maybe. You go.
But that was the moment that I was like,
that's really early.
Yeah. So I wanted to point
out. By the way, nobody else watched that video.
You know why? Because Universe planned that I was the only person that was supposed to watch it.
Yo.
So thank you guys for making that video for me.
Yes. Yo. So a couple things. One that I remember is that we went downstairs. There is a Chinese restaurant just right around the corner.
To buy one fortune cookie?
To buy like a million of them, right? And now how many people go into a Chinese restaurant just being like, I don't really want anything except for like a ton of fortune cookies. And they're just like, Sure. Yeah. All right. So I came up here with them. And then the other thing is that Greg Mayo, who does all of our music and was the band leader at the Yolono tour.
Yeah.
During those years, there was a lot of phone calls from us to him just being like, yo,
can you do this Jay-Z song, but like as a klezmer version? Like or, Rock Boys, like so it sounds like it's Eastern European.
Or can you do Lean Back?
Right.
Thanks, man. Yeah. Can you do Lean Back in sort of like, you know, just like...
Yeah, a lot of, like, bells and, like, Chinese...
Yeah, sounds. And he did that, and it worked out. But I'm glad that you...
Was that played during that script?
It does, Totally, like,
well,
replayed
it. Got out, it got, like, kind of, you know, it got shadowed by the
writing?
By the writing, yeah.
And the acting?
Really for the name drop. Like, anything past that, you were just like, fuck it. Like,
well, not just the name drop. I think the way it was put together, too, was, like, it definitely had me more of, like, yo, I'll rock with them.
That's
as
dope.
Opposed to, like... Yo, why they trying to play me like that, right? Even though it had probably some connotation. I don't remember. It was funny, though.
Thank you.
I remember.
That. Wait, so my question is, because you're a battle rapper, you were a battle rapper. When guys would diss you, did you actually not like them? Because it seemed like you did not like Iron Solomon, or you did not like maybe Sirius Jones. Yeah.
I sit here in 2015, and I would say I don't think there was any one battle that I've ever been engaged in. Whether we talk about it was those few Fight Clubs, the one Smack DVD that I did, the 106 in Park Run, or going all the way back to my first battle in the seventh grade in the men's bathroom at the mall or whatever. whatever. I don't think there was one.
I want to know about that
one,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
That's where it all started. There was one urinal left, and there was only one way to decide who would get it. Right? And I have bars, and I got bars for that. So, but I was going to say, I don't think... You asking me this question makes me think, and I don't know, this may or may not have the effect of, you know, how I developed even in the craft. Never did I ever find myself really personally invested in the manner that you're describing, where I see the person and I have a legitimate, genuine, like, disgust or anything. Well, it was always within the context of just, this is the dude I'm battling.
Right, it was work. But, like... I remember, like, watching, like, Freestyle Fridays.
Yes.
And you would definitely, like, when you had to stand next to them, it was, like, 30 seconds and you were heated.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think that heated is more kind of, it resonates more in terms of just the age I was at that point, I think. I mean.
Yeah, you were young.
I was like, 20 years old.
Crazy.
Yeah. I was 20 during the 106 in part, the run.
Yeah.
Right? And, yeah, I mean, I every now and then I'll stumble across it on YouTube. And when I say stumble across, I mean, I'll be Googling myself at 3 a.m. Trying to relive
looking
my...
Looking for those It's the Real videos.
Reliving my glory days.
Right.
But I'll watch them and I'll see the thing you're describing.
Yeah.
Which is this... Yeah, not only was it hunger or passion, but there was definitely this, like, a fire. That, I think, is the missing link as to why I don't battle currently. Because that's like the billion-dollar question, you know, as people are watching these different leagues, URL and KOTD and all this stuff, which I'm an avid supporter and viewer of.
Yeah.
I probably bought more pay-per-views this year than I've ever bought, right? And that's combined with all the Tyson fights. Of everything. Yeah, of everything. And, you know, but here I am. People are like, yo, when you going to jump in?
Yeah,
if there's
yeah.
ever a time to come back, it's now. And I'm just like, yo, I know what it has evolved into, not only in terms of just the craft, but a certain thing that's required within the person to engage in it. And I guess just to be brutally honest with myself and the general public, I don't feel it there.
Okay.
I can still watch it and appreciate it. And, you know, I can get my Stephen A. Smith on.
Sure.
We can talk about it all day.
Right.
But to actually engage in it, it's like, I just don't want to do it until I know that link, that missing link is there.
So before we get into just a ton of legendary stuff, I do want to talk about... a very legendary moment, which was you did come through to the Yolono tour, the You Only Live One Night Only tour. We made that phone call. You were like, I'm totally there. This seems perfect for me because, and we'll talk about this later too, you have this comedy career that you're working on right now.
Yes.
Sorry about the couscous flying all
Don't
over.
Don't worry, man. I always like to place a little by my crotch area. Chinese tradition.
So... We had a ton of guests come out that night, Bun B and Clark Kent and Bridget Kelly and Joel Ortiz, and we had this
shout out to Ray.
Yeah. We had this moment in the we did two shows that night. Mm-hmm. We had this moment in the second show where we had a song where we just had the hook about bringing New York back, and we wanted to have.
Real New York rappers like come up and rap over.
Yeah,
so like, we didn't have anything but the hook, and so. Teray comes up at first, and we're like, yeah, like, that's cool, but I don't know if it's going to work. We need somebody, like, we have a more, we have a different vision for this.
A specific vision. Yeah. We need that Rough Rider sound. Do we have any Rough Riders in the house? And we brought you out. And what we expected was what we got, but then what we didn't expect was how good you are. So, number one, your crowd control is unbelievable. You just owned that crowd. And number two, you were funny as fuck. And number three, off the dome, as far as we were concerned, unless maybe you had like worked on this, which is totally cool too.
For months.
But like your rhymes.
My career led up to that moment. I got signed with Rough Riders and got dropped just so I could
strictly for this.
Strictly for that Yolono show.
But listen, like the punchlines that you had about us, like on stage, was just amazing and thinking back to like when we would watch you on Freestyle Friday and to have you right there with us was just as mind-blowing as I think, like, you know, anything. It was really special for us. So thank you for doing that.
Nah, thank you guys for having me in mind, man.
Of course.
The only thing I can think of, like, just when I got that first text or call from you about I was like, I guess drag must be out of town. Yeah, I mean, he must be helling back. Yeah. I mean, I guess he's still in hell. He's not back yet, right? But shout out to drag. I think this is one thing I never get to share enough. Naturally, when I do interviews, people are like, what was it like bonding with X? And
right.
Did you have dim sum with Eve every Sunday?
Did you?
No, I didn't. I did it. But if there was one person of the original Double R Fold and Empire that I mean, I grew up and all these guys were my heroes.
Yeah.
Like all these artists and Swiss and the whole faction. But if there was one that I think I somewhat remotely got a chance to connect with, it was probably drag. I remember like there was times when we would get booked together for shows like overseas, and next thing you know, I'm like in a van in Germany, and like I look to my left and there's drag on.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or even times in a studio where I'd be working on like a little mixtape joint. And you remember this one Keith Murray song called Candy Bars or something like that? And he's rhyming about girls, but using candy bars as the metaphor.
It's not the one that's like, something like candy, so dance with me.
May not be. That sounds like a Khalees song. It may be it. Yeah. But I had the instrumental, and then I was like, yo, drag, you want to jump on this? And it would be those moments, and he'd be like, yeah, and he'd jump on that.
That's awesome.
And so shout out to drag. I know he's still doing music. I know he's still grinding.
Listen, there's a ton of just epic songs that came through that Yonkers studio, but Down Bottom is just unbelievable.
Yes.
I know which song you're talking about. It's the one that she like a candy bar, like a candy bar.
Yes.
All right.
He does serve a purpose.
Oh
apparently.
No, totally. That's strictly. Yeah, yeah. That's it. That's it.
I thought it was just taking up food space.
Because you saw who was chefing right there. You know.
Yes.
This guy.
But okay.
No. So you moved to New York. How far before you started doing Freestyle Friday?
Because
you're originally from Miami.
Close. Yeah, born and raised in Miami, and essentially didn't leave, you know, Miami till I was about 19.
Okay.
So I graduated there, stayed another year, grinding it out, and then in 2001, we all moved here.
Whole family comes up. And you moved to Queens?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, at the
time, your mom had a restaurant.
Well, down in Miami we did.
Okay.
So the tale is basically, you know, I was, you know, my mom and dad, you know, God bless them, they moved here back in the 70s to chase the American dream.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the American dream for any Chinese family? To own a Chinese restaurant in the hood.
Okay, right? All right.
and that kind of came true. I mean, they opened their first one when I was about, I think, 7 years old.
Okay.
So essentially from 7 years onward, that was my world.
Yeah.
You know, running around in the Chinese restaurant, you know, keep an eye out for those white guys who come and try to buy up all our fortune cookies.
It's a thing.
Yeah. It happens everywhere. Yeah. It's a thing.
See, I thought it was rare, but okay.
But, you know, when I was in my teen years is when I started to feel a little resentment about it because, you know, I felt like that's where I was trapped. And I only bring that up because that's when I also got into hip-hop.
Okay.
So I think a lot of times people are like, yo, you know, you in hip-hop, how, why, what, when, where?
Right.
I think that had a lot to do with it because it was through, yo, the mysteries of shadowboxing that I was able to escape kind of. You know, everyone else after school is going to the mall, going to the park, going wherever. And you know where I'm going? Straight to the restaurant. Right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
To answer the phone, to make deliveries. And yeah, it was in those Wu verses or Hell on Earth or whatever was the thing at that moment that allowed me to just find some sort of, you know,
escape.
Escape, yeah. Indeed. So after graduating, by that time, so we're talking, I was like 18, 19.
Yeah.
My parents had opened 3 shops and closed 3 shops.
Okay.
So open 3 as in like open 1, business wasn't good, had to shut it down, take out a loan. Number 2, didn't work again. Let's take out a loan from like an uncle or a cousin, didn't work. So by the third one closing down, I think my mom and dad, even they felt like Miami might not be the place at that point
right.
to be. They needed a major reset. And then I also knew that if I was going to do the music thing, where else but New York? So we all came up together.
So how serious in high school were you about really making records, really like...
Oh. He was battling guys at the urinal.
No, the urinal was the name of a club, actually. And that's the twist. That's the Sixth Sense twist at the end. When I say the urinal, that was like, you know, our shelter.
Yeah,
right?
It's because like, everyone's pissy there. Like, yeah. Just, yeah.
That was our shelter. While B-Rabbit was at the shelter.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, me and Future, we was down at... We was down at the urinal.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the name of Makai's character, right?
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
How serious, to answer your question, put it like this. When I was 17, I released my first single, Quiet as Kept. My mom, as against, you know, my dreams of becoming a rapper as she was, it was more so my dad. I don't know how I convinced her. I might have scammed her in some way, but when I was 17, she actually put up like $2,000 for me to go to the studio, record 2 songs, and release a single.
Physical copies.
Physical copy.
Yeah. Yeah.
With a, you know, and this was everything to me. I remember like getting that done. We press up like 1,000 copies. We make flyers. I'm putting them up on the walls at the mall.
Yeah.
By the school, on the light poles. Like, to a 17-year-old who's chasing a rap dream, that was almost the equivalent of making it already.
Yeah, for sure.
First of all, your Asian parents were like supportive of you. Yeah.
I'll tell you the name of the songs. Side A was I can even reference it as Side A, Side B.
Yeah.
Even though it was a CD, but
yeah,
Side
A. You need to explain to kids what that means.
A compact disc.
Side A was a song called I Never Met Her.
Okay.
Basically it's about girls.
Sure.
Yeah.
The premise is, I never met a girl that was my kind of girl. I never met a girl. I never met her. That was my 17-year-old hook writing game.
Sure.
If anyone ever wanted. Yeah. And I got this local Miami producer, I don't know, for like $500 or whatever, to make me up one of the most dopest low-budget Timbaland tracks.
Okay.
Actually, I remember kind of what...
Was it Cool or Dre?
I would have been happy to get even one of them. But essentially, if you had to imagine it, it was modeled kind of after the I Need a Ride or Die.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I don't even know if sequentially it makes sense, but I'm saying the vibe of that song was similar to that.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe it was a foreshadowing of what's to come. I don't know, but that was Side A. Side B was this real cerebral conceptual track called Life's a Bitch.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, we've never heard any rap song called Life's a Bitch. But I don't know. I think, to my credit, at that age, I don't think I had heard Nas's Life's a Bitch.
Right, yeah. Right.
Because the thing for me with Nas, I didn't get put onto him till maybe a year or two after that. Mm-hmm. And that was through It Was Written.
Yeah, yeah.
So
yeah.
People always talk about Illmatic.
Right.
To me, It Was Written was actually like his first album.
Right. Sure.
And then I got older and went back to listen to Illmatic. But Side B was this song called Life's a Bitch. And the concept for that one was, I was basically, hey, who would have guessed it? I'm talking about life like it was a girl.
Yeah.
Yeah. A la Common, I Used to Love Her.
No, but very original.
But at the age of 17.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So
sure.
For what it's worth, it was very rather fresh, forward-thinking for a 17-year-old. So your question of, was it something I was kind of already actively pursuing?
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
And did you see battling as your way in?
Totally. I mean, So along with everything I just described with, you know, convincing moms to put up $2,000 for this little single project, I was already actively battling at that time.
Yeah.
And in terms of like even looking for local contests. And this might have been the thing. In Miami, at that point in time, man, to say there was a handful probably would have been overestimating.
Of like talent around there?
Not the talent, but just opportunity.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Meaning like at most in a 1-year window, you might have 2 that you can really look forward to.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So, you know, like in New York, I mean, I don't know how it stands currently, but for the most part, on any given week, you can find something to get into.
Yeah.
Whether it is a battle, a cypher, an open mic, or whatever. But down there, we're talking like 97, 98, 99 in Miami. It just wasn't the case.
So you move up to New York. Did you really meet your manager on like Broadway, battling you were on like Broadway and 8th somewhere.
Well, it was outside of Fat Beats, right?
Yeah, right, yeah. Outside Fat Beats. I mean, I ended up in front of Fat Beats because being the entrepreneur that I am, I mean, it was more survival mode than anything. I made up these little mixtapes, best of gin battles, and I burned them on a CDR, made a nice little cover, and this is the thing that I'm peddling on the streets.
Right? Yeah.
And the art of peddling still lives to this day, as you guys can attest, and I'm sure any New Yorker can attest. I mean, I bought a blank burn CD today for $5 on the street. Well, I mean, I might be surprised when I put it in later.
Yeah, there's nothing on it.
There might be something. The surprise is that there is something on it. But at that time, I had these CDs, and this just goes to show you how, I mean, maybe how self-absorbed I was. I called it best of gin battles, as if like the world is looking for, you know, like your random New Yorker pedestrian.
Awesome,
it's like, yo, this is the best of gin battles right here.
And you're like, and I'm gin. Like, what a double surprise.
So I press these up, and I'm slanging them literally just all throughout the, you know, the borough.
Wait, how is your pedal game?
My pedal game was on point, man.
Yeah?
It was on point. And I think I've noticed now the kind of the go-to method is just pure aggressiveness.
Yes.
Right? Right? And sometimes where it's borderline extortion. Like, these guys, I watch them, and they're borderline. I mean, they're on the verge of it being a stick-up.
Yeah.
It might as well. I mean, it's like a verbal stick-up.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, my man. You know, they're talking to some, you know, unsuspecting tourist from Germany.
Yeah.
You need this album, my man. Yo, with the ultra grip on the shoulder.
Yeah, yeah. For sure. Support, like, you know, independent hip-hop. Do you, like, now everybody starts a conversation by being like, do you like black people?
I know.
Ooh.
Yo, so we get it.
That's how I should have did it back then.
It's crazy.
But do you like black people?
Yeah.
Then it's like, yo, so we walk through, if we have to go through Times Square, which,
forget about it.
Which by the way, we really don't like to go through Times Square, but if we do.
Wow, what a brave stance.
I'm just saying. Yo, people know us in the comedy community and in the music community, so we're getting both, like, do you like comedy shows? And, like, both do you support independent music?
Well, everybody gets that, though.
No, but, like, we like, if someone recognized us, which one time they did, they came up and they were like, yo, and we're like, no, not today, and they're just like, oh, I'm just a fan of It's the Real, and we're like,
but nice
to meet you. Yeah.
Yeah.
But, like, that's super tough. I got another one for you, which was, I have this history where, I worked with Kanye and went to the Grammys with him as his videographer back in 2005.
Sweet.
And before that, I got to know the whole Good Music team. Mm-hmm. So we were down, our other brother Dan and I and one of his friends from college had gone down to Asbury Park to see an early Kanye show before the album dropped.
Yeah.
And it was like him touring with Lil Brother, and John Legend was John Stevens, right? Don C was DJ Offbeat. Like,
Consequence was around?
So Consequence was around. Consequence, we were waiting out for Kanye at the at his bus, because at that point I'm like, yo, I know you have your own film production company out of Chicago called Hustle Film, and I want to fuck with you guys on that level. I want to write scripts for you guys, do documentaries, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, hold on. So Consequence is there, and he was like, yo, I'll go get them, but you got to buy two of my mixtapes. And I did, and still have them uploaded onto my computer these today.
My approach was, I should have did the, hey, you like black people? That probably would have increased my sales by like 200%. But I went with the alternate. And it was effective for me for the most part, which was the endearing, charming, you know, passive aggressive.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I always kicked off with this one. This was like kind of just a given. Yo, you listen to hip hop? And I don't know why, but that was just always the way in.
Right.
It was enough to establish what I'm moving, right? Like my product.
Mm-hmm. Your work.
I'm turning this into the wire.
That's
right.
Yeah, that's right.
It was strong enough to establish that, but it also wasn't alarming or aggressive.
Sure.
You know what I mean? Because I wasn't like, you got to buy this. So a lot of times, you know, they'll stop and be like, you know, oh, yeah. And then the sequence would be, yo, I do freestyle battles, and this is like just a collection of my, you know, my best battles.
Yeah, someone made this for me.
Yeah, I didn't make it. Right? Yeah, I didn't put this together. Who would do that? But I do have 10 copies here.
That's right.
And my pedal game was okay, and it was also because I think after X amount of days and time of doing it, I had it down packed to like a science.
Yeah, yeah.
But still maintain that fluidness of, yo, all pedaling on New York street boils down to is improv
yep.
and dealing with rejection. the more you can deal with rejection, if you master the art of rejection, yo, you could do it in New York. Like, totally. You could do anything in New York.
Yeah.
But if you master the art of rejection in New York, yo, you can kind of write your own ticket.
As they say on the subway, a smile is free.
And that, yo, and I look back on that. So to kind of piece it together, yes, that is how I met my manager at that time, mm-hmm. my first manager.
Right.
His name is Kay. Shout out to Kay. And then it was through there also, through me trying to peddle the CD to him, that we established like a working relationship. And then we embarked on 106 and Park together.
Okay. So yeah, 106 and Park starts. Mm-hmm. They didn't have Freestyle Friday from the beginning, did they?
I don't think so. It's something they implemented a little bit. Yeah.
And so you get word of it, and you're like, I got to do that.
Well, no. Before I even came up to New York, while I was down in Miami, I already had gotten word of it. Like, mm-hmm. I knew of it.
Yeah.
You know, because you got to imagine, at that time, I'm so engulfed in it. I'm watching and looking for anything that has to do with rap battles.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point, MTV had did, like, a battling type of thing that they did. And Sway was judging and hosting it.
Yeah.
But then when 106 and Park introduced it, it popped up on my radar ASAP.
Yeah.
But moving up here, I never connected the dots that, yo, that's something I should attempt to do.
Yeah.
But then we got wind of a straight up open audition casting thing up in Harlem on 106th Street and Park Ave. And I went up there. And then, went about it the exact way.
What was that like? How many people are in that audition?
Oh, man, it was crazy because... apparently, I was the only one. I wasn't the only one that knew about the open call, right? So imagine every peddler in New York knew about the open call.
Yeah.
So everyone's up there. Not only are they up there. So, like, not only is, picture like this, not only is, you know, Hov up there, but he's up there with Bleak.
Right.
He's there with, you know, State Property.
Yep.
He's up there, you know, the whole gang is up there.
Yeah.
So
they
I go up
together.
There. Yeah, exactly. And I go up there with me, and I think Kay went up with me,
mm-hmm.
and it was just the two of us, and yo, I just stay focused, and you go into this room, and essentially they make you battle another person, like it is Freestyle Friday.
Right.
30 seconds here, 30 seconds there, and then exactly like how we're sitting right here, it's like, all right, thank you, we'll keep in touch, and they send you on your way. And yo, they sent me on my way, I went right back to the front of Fat Beats, continued my pedal game,
yeah.
And just kind of, if you ask me, yo, did you know at that moment that it was going to unfold the way it did, meaning you would get a call?
Yes.
Yes, I did. I will say that. Like, I didn't know when, but I knew I would get a call eventually.
What was the competition like during auditions? Like, was it legit?
It was legit. They had me battle this one other guy, and the thing I remember, if anything, was that
I was ugly and stupid.
Oh, yeah. Like, his shoes were untied. Yeah. I remember that I was conscious of it, but also... this was just like an organic kind of tactic and strategy for me, even in all my battles prior to that one that would determine the outcome of my musical career, mm-hmm. right? But I made sure I incorporated not just a few, but a substantial amount of freestyle elements.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So if I'm looking at the panel of judges and I see one has a card that says Gary in front of his, I'm throwing a Gary bar in there.
Yeah,
right?
About Gary, Indiana.
Yes. Where Michael Jackson grew up. And, you know, I'm about to give you a beating like Joe, so you better get out of here with that flow. And I'll bring it right back to Gary because, Gary knows. You know what I'm saying? So I made sure I incorporated that, and I think that's why I felt so confident when I left.
Yeah.
Because I know that it really appealed to them. And when I got the call, I think to me it wasn't even like, yo, this is it. This call is gonna be it. I actually remember approaching it with it was kind of weird because I was only 20 at the time and you would think I would be more imaginative. But I remember approaching it with a very practical mindset. Like, yo, 1 week at a time. Week one. I was almost like mad scientist.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this first week is crucial. Every week would be. But this week is because, one, I'm going up as the challenger.
Right. Yep.
And two, the guy that I'm going up against is the, you know, 6 week and running champ.
Right.
Yeah. Who's going for his 7th win.
Yo, he must hate you, by the way, because that he was this close to getting into the Hall of Fame.
Well, who knows? I mean, I might have saved him from something.
Yeah,
like,
sure.
Like
a crippling drug addiction.
From all no, the I fame. Saved him from your couscous. Even more important.
That's right. That's
it
right.
would be him sitting Yo. Here with you instead of me. I don't know, but all the best to him and where he is right now. But I go up there. And I knew that whatever I said in that 30 seconds had to be the most crippling, just like the sharpest 30 seconds
yeah,
that
yeah.
I could conjure up, you know. So what worked for me was an element of surprise, without a doubt. Because as much battling as I had done, I mean, to that date, up to that point, yeah, Black entertainment television had not seen a Chinese dude, you know, with an Aniche bucket hat on.
Right.
With the matching sweater.
It's such a specific thing.
And, yeah. And I planned that outfit specifically. I'm like, yo, watch. This bucket hat is what's going to throw him off.
Yeah.
And then, like, I remember I had, like, do-rag strings hanging out. Yo, word to everything. I had, like, a red do-rag in my back pocket with the strings hanging out.
Just, like, ready to wear it.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I go up there, and I remember the defining moment, or the critical moment, is when I finished my verse, and before he even started, Fat Man Scoop, who was DJ,
because
Fat Man Scoop DJs every battle that matters, right? Fat Man Scoop looked at the champion guy, who he's established a relationship with up to that point, right? And he's like, Hassan. This is all documented, which is cool.
Yeah.
The guy's name is Hassan. Shout out to Hassan. He looks at Hassan, and he goes, yo, Hassan, get focused. And honestly, if we had to really break it down, I think that might have been what got in his head.
Because,
like I'm not trying midway to weigh it through, on Fat Man Scoop, right?
No, but midway through his verse, he just like stops, right?
And I think it might have been one of those scenarios where, yeah, he got into his head. And not to say though, because of my performance, but it was just all those factors, you know? Like Scoop was like, get focused. And you know, you see him looking at Fat Man Scoop and, you know, acknowledging it. But who knows with these things? And then I win. And then next week I go back. And then
so week one, is the idea of national television weighing on you at all?
Wow, that's such a good question that no journalist or blogger or fan or anyone has ever asked.
Well, to be fair,
that question was as amazing as this couscous.
I was going to say, has anyone ever made you, like, you know, a meal while you answered questions?
That question, though, it didn't weigh on my mind.
Is that just like naivete?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
More naivete than anything else.
That's
It wasn't me having like this Zen-like mindset where it's like, be at one with the stage, Jin.
Well, yeah, I mean, because
Free and AJ are not there.
Yeah, because there is that thought.
Hold on. So Jin is like pretending to bow.
Right.
And there is a moment where you do that to one of your opponents.
Yeah, I do.
And
yeah.
I'm just like, yo, like, you're just like.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. You're sticking the knife in.
That's all just that's like Sun Tzu, Art of War, a little bit of that, little bit of just, you know, Jerky Boys, a little bit of just me being a prick. But, I think that's such a valid question and one that nobody ever asked me. But, yeah, it was absolutely just young and naive as opposed to me being zen-like. And it worked for me, I think. Because I go up there every week and I'm not really dwelling too much on, yo, this platform is this platform. I'm just zeroing in on my opponent.
Right.
And I'm like, yo, I gotta kill this.
As the weeks go on, do you get this sort of idea in your head where you're like, well, it's been 4 weeks, and this is 5 weeks. Like you're scoring 40 every night. You want to keep the streak going.
Oh, see, I see you feeling like you're unbeatable,
like a boxer.
Like, yeah, like probably like 2 or 3 weeks in.
Well, not. I think I don't think I ever arrived at the point of unbeatable. But I think what was like, meaning in my own head at least.
Right.
But I think what was something that I had to be mindful of was not getting caught up in, yo, the excitement. Because I tell you, forget about week 4 or 5. Even by week 2, it was very apparent to me the impact of what was happening.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it would always be a Wednesday taping.
Yeah.
But it would go live on Friday night. Right.
Because
right?
they couldn't handle it.
Yeah. They had to, like, process it through editing first.
Before, yeah.
But what I mean is, here I go into my first taping on Wednesday night. Friday night it airs. Yo, I'm telling you, literally by that next Saturday morning, I'm talking about the first week, I walk out into the streets of New York, and my whole universe has completely changed.
You're selling the best of Jin DVD or CDs.
Oh, now they're like, now I'm just standing there.
Yeah.
They're like, yo, I need that. And
that's
the effect.
Awesome.
That was the effect. And then, as you can imagine, with every week that's passing, that whole element is just increasing.
Yeah.
So by week 4 or 5, and to me this is beautiful, I'm still out there. Like, I'm still in front of Fat Beats, but now my pedal game doesn't have to be as intense.
No,
I'm just chilling.
Now you're like real like,
I'm just like,
yeah, how much you want it for?
Well, yeah.
Like holding on to
it. But yo, I'm still taking, you know, Subway, and I'm still on the and to me that was probably the most fun times. Like week 5 into Freestyle Friday, but I'm still on the 6 train, you know, or the 7 going back into Queens, jumping off at Jackson Heights or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I think that was my, for what it is, that was my first taste of, yo, this drug called fame.
Yeah.
You know, which kills.
Sure.
You know, and
word to Hassan.
But does it feel
I saved
like
him from that? Yes. You know? Nah. So wait, shout out to Hassan.
So, you know, I don't think that anybody actually came close to beating you, except for Sky Zoo came the closest.
Yes.
Sky Zoo came the closest.
Yes.
When he had that line about how AJ, you rap
like AJ dresses.
We're terrible. Yeah.
Yes.
Which is one of the best lines.
Yes. In that context and on that platform.
Oh, my God. AJ standing there and then Free having to say, hey.
Chill, man.
Yeah. Like, you do not diss the man in his house.
Yeah. And even outside of that one line, to me, that was probably the most, like bar for bar, that was the one, I think, whether you're viewing from home or you're one of those three judges up there with the little card,
right. Yeah.
That's the one where you really had to put some thought into it.
Yeah.
And really be like, ah, man, but they didn't do one more rounds back then.
Yeah.
But for me, it was definitely worthy of a one more round.
And you know what? So the three judges that day were Tweet, Missy, and Timbaland.
Yeah.
And Tim said, I think we should do another
one more round.
Yeah.
So
because he was excited. That was
Tim
awesome.
Trying to sabotage. Nah. That's why I didn't buy no Timbaland beats for my Rough Rider album.
So
that didn't probably.
But like
my budget couldn't.
But
withstand
like five.
It.
Right, you can only afford like Young Kanye. And
yeah,
Just Blaze.
Young Kanye.
Yeah.
That's different. Imagine that, yo, purchasing a Young Kanye beat and like a not Young Kanye beat is two different dimensions.
So
$18,000 each.
So 4 or 5 weeks in.
Yeah.
When do you get the idea that, like, yo, a record deal is on the way?
Well, Quiet is Kept, by the fourth week, I had signed with Rough Riders already.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, like, I don't know if I've ever disclosed this. Even if I have, I probably did it in a very subtle, like, I might have been at a barbecue in Chinatown. It's just like 4 or 5 people. But on this massive level,
in front of a mic,
this is the first. Yeah, by the fourth or fifth week, I had signed already.
When did they approach you?
They approached us probably not too far within that. So probably by the third week, roughly, we were actually in talks with them. And then like one or two others, like labels.
Who else?
I remember going up to the Columbia office at one point. But I mean,
because
of
Wyclef.
may or may not have been. I don't know. But because me and Kay were running around at that time.
Right.
So we're literally just left and right. It was like a whirlwind for us, right? And we're left and right just meeting up with any and everybody who was interested, which was any and everybody.
And are they interested in hearing you rap in person, or are they like, I've seen what I've seen on TV and you're magnetic and you can control a crowd? And
I think it was a lot of that.
Okay.
Which I think for what it is kind of what worked for me and against me from the beginning of my career, which was there's this initial feeling of excitement, but then sometimes that excitement gets lost as you try to transition into the next chapter of what's supposed to happen. So by week four or five, I would say it was even safe to say that the ink had dried already. Like, I'm Rough Riders.
Wow.
The chain is on my neck.
Yeah. Wait, did you wear the chain during the...
I don't. Because there was this kind of magnificent rollout plan, so to speak.
Yeah.
Where, and this speaks a lot on Rough Riders too. I mean, they were like, yo, we know you're just going to keep rocking it.
Right.
And that was kind of like betting on the house in a crazy way. They were like, just don't share this news yet. And then after you win on the last week, just announce it right there.
So crazy.
So nowadays, that's like the whole Kanye Rockefeller chaining the Kanye Rockefeller chain.
Yeah, no kidding.
Day.
But now, conspiracy theorying me
go
is
for
starting
it.
To think that because Rough Riders got in with you so early, maybe the whole thing was rigged. Maybe you didn't deserve to win the last 3 weeks.
Go for it. Wow. Hey,
no.
I'm gonna write
anything to bring me back into the spotlight. If it takes a conspiracy theory courtesy of It's the Real,
that's right.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I'm gonna write like a massive blog post on like a shadow blog.
That's right.
Oh man, and I'm gonna have to follow up with a Reddit AMA.
Yes,
pertaining specifically to that
theory.
Hey.
That's right.
Well,
wait, maybe we should edit this out.
There was 1 week that Swiss was a judge.
Really?
And Swiss.
Did he have
Swiss?
To be like, oh, like this guy?
Swiss was a judge after I think we had signed already. Or if not, around the same time that we were in talks.
Yeah.
But I do remember clearly that before week seven, probably like week six or seven, we already were all on the same page about after you win that last week, just go up there and pull the chain out and, you know, make a big hoopla.
Yeah. You had met DMX early on, though.
Yeah.
Like down in Florida.
Yeah.
Really?
17-year-old, life's a bitch.
I do my research.
Life's a bitch, Jin. Like that.
Yep,
Jin.
Yep.
He met.
Side B.
Yeah, side B. He met DMX. Wait, let me rephrase that. I didn't meet X, but I made an attempt to. He was at in the Miami. Urinal.
Did Consequence make you buy two of his?
Yeah, it was definitely one of. What was the scenario? The scenario was he was in Miami. I don't think he was working on his Dark and Hell is Hot. Mm-hmm. He was probably working on Flesh of My Flesh, Blood of My Blood.
Dope.
Dope. Yeah. Epic masterpiece.
Yeah.
Down at the Hit Factory.
Yep.
Which is like a hop, skip, and a jump away from, you know, my old neighborhood. So me and my friends right away, I jump in my Honda Civic at the time. Ride of choice for sure. Young aspiring Asian rappers.
Listen, I was about to say.
Yeah.
Did you have a spoiler on it?
No, I didn't.
Ooh,
I kept it real stock.
Wow. Then you know what?
I kept it real stock.
Forget it.
Kept it super stock. But I go down to the studio, and in front of the studio, there's, you know, it's like it's gated.
Yeah.
So there's already a bunch of locals just hanging out outside, you know, teens, adults, waiting to catch a glimpse of X, right?
Yeah.
So I run straight up to the gate. I got my little 2-3-man crew with me. And I
Smiles
just start...
and South Star.
Yeah. Yeah. Smiles was busy. Yeah. It was just me and South Star. Who I met recently. Shout out to South Star, man. You
really?
Know, yeah. Like you would think. You know,
Orlando we, boys. Yeah,
yeah. We never crossed paths all these years, but like about a year ago, me and South Star ended up at the same...
same terminal? At
a same event in okay. Chicago.
Dope.
But so I run up to the gate and I just start spitting. Mm-hmm. Now, behind the gate, right? So outside us regular, you know, civilians, sure. we're trying to catch a glimpse of X. Behind the gate, it's just Rough Rider Central.
Right.
So people are like lifting weights.
Yo.
There was probably like a pit bull fight to the far right side, to the left. You know, there's dice shooting.
There's like literally all of it. Like
all that, of it there, right like, there. The bikes yeah. are rolled up.
You got
yeah.
the whole experience.
It looks like a Rough Rider Anthem, you know, the prologue.
Lots of right. lots of lugs.
And yeah. I,
like if there was like a Disney World for Rough Riders, like that would
that
be
that was it.
That wow. was like, it's a small
Frontierland.
World.
Frontierland.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Either one. It's a small world. So I just start spitting, right? I start spitting, and naturally, in Jin fashion, I start rhyming about what I see.
Yeah.
There's like a basketball hoop. I'm like, yo, he's shooting a three-pointer, but when I kick a flow, you know, watch it get blocked, you know that I'm hot.
Jackie DMX, Joyner. Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Jackie Joyner. How do you know I always end up linking three-pointer with Jackie Joyner?
Is that what you do?
Often, yeah. In battles, I've done it at least 4 times.
Oh, you heard it here first. Jin recycles rhymes.
So, apparently, my Jackie Joyner bars... they catch the attention of the powers that be behind the gate.
Yeah.
So in like a Willy Wonka chocolate factory moment, the gate starts opening, and then I hear this voice that's like, "Yeah, yo, let that little man in right there."
Yo.
And this happens to be D Dean of Rough Riders. So because you know, like Rough Riders for the longest, you know they're a very family structured.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah,
but
yeah.
The faces have always been D and Y.
Yeah.
Right. D Dean Y Dean.
Yep.
And D was like, "Yeah, let that little dude in right there." So the gate's opening, and then everyone outside, the civilians are like, "Oh!" So I stroll in.
This is like Willy Wonka.
It yeah. is Willy Wonka.
All you need is like D to like do like a forward somersault.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And then all the other Rough Riders like, "Doo da, he just got bars. Let him in. He'll be a superstar." Right?
Wow.
Jackie Joyner.
So I stroll in, and I don't even know if D remembers this. But I meet D, and from there, he's like, "Yeah, you know, you nice, you know." And then they made me rhyme in typical Rough Rider CEO
sure.
fashion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Surprisingly, I don't remember battling anybody there, which I would have expected. But they was like, "Yeah, just, yo, let me hear something." So I'm going in my mental catalog. I'm kicking all these random verses. I'm freestyling. And then in the end, what I thought was going to be like, "Yo, this is my moment, right? This is what I've worked hard for all yeah. this time." He was like, "All right, man, keep doing your thing."
Damn.
And just sent me out the way, out the gate. Out the,
damn.
You know, I walk back out the Wonka factory, right? Walk right out the gates that I came in through.
And but, kept rapping about things you saw?
Yeah.
Exactly, still.
Damn.
And then I move on with life. Now, here's the crazy thing. I don't know to this day, because even after meeting them again and being on the roster
yeah.
for like 5 years,
yeah.
I personally never was like, "So y'all remember that one day, right? Jackie Joyner, you know Jackie Joyner. Come on, D Jackie Joyner." And I mean, I've always treasured that there was always
wow.
these somewhat like a premonition of some sort that it was going to unfold in a certain way.
Man.
And I have one with Wyclef too. Like, you
before,
know, before doing the song with
you were
him.
In Haiti.
Yeah. There was bars. They were playing basketball. By
yeah.
It was him and the president. With him, he was in Miami promoting the Gone Till November
mm-hmm.
song and project.
Yeah.
So
the
he
carnival.
Had, yeah.
yeah.
He had cannabis with him. mm-hmm. who, like, at that point, and even to this day, is just someone that I've always held in the highest regard,
mm-hmm.
Just from pure student of
You're talking to two guys who don't really care about cannabis, by the way.
That's fine. Yeah. Hey, this just goes to show you, you know, how adamant I am about emphasizing this. Because sure, yeah. I know you guys don't care about him.
Well, you didn't know that, but yeah.
Now that I know, now I'm going to intensify my tone of voice now. But they were down there, and they were on this radio station, 99 Jams.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I call up the station, and I'm like, yo, my name is Jen, I rhyme, da-da-da. And they were like, let me hear something. Like, on the other end is Clef and Biss, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then I kick this rhyme. And I remember it was around that time that I started really kind of getting real intricate with my bar, like, you know, right. like metaphors and things like that.
Yeah.
Influenced by, you know, guys like, whether it was Cannabis or Nas or whoever, right? But Biss was one of the ones that I remember really just unlocking my brain to, you know. So I say that to say, at one time I was writing rhymes from the mind of Cannabis, meaning. So
yeah.
I remember that verse I kicked on the radio. It was like, My blood type is triple P for passionately pulverizing punk MCs. Mm. Something along the lines of that.
Yeah.
And I finished my rhyme, and you know, the DJ's like, all right, we're going to get into this JT Money joint. And it was just this complete weird, like, disconnect. Okay, we got that new Trick Daddy. Shut up.
Yeah.
Right? And then, but
you're like, you know, like, talking about like philosophical, just like stars and everything.
Alliteration.
Yeah. Galaxies. But I go to the concert, and Clef remembers. Mm-hmm. Clef is on stage and he's like, yeah, that's, you know, because I end up meeting with them, and Clef is like, yeah, that's the young dude that called up the radio station. Shout out to
them.
That's
cool.
That's awesome.
And it is epic. I'm like 18 at the time, roughly. So once again, when I reconnected with Clef for Learn Chinese and that whole, you know, saga, I don't even know if he remembers that in Miami once upon a time. So that's two instances where these kind of like deja vu-ish type of scenarios.
So back on Freestyle Friday, what's your relationship a couple weeks in with AJ and Free? Obviously, they see the potential, but...
Yeah. I think from day one onward, they came across to me as just genuinely supportive.
Yeah.
And I think they had high hopes for me.
Yep.
And, you know, they were always very, like, very nurturing. I mean, for what it was worth, as much nurturing as you can be as a host of a hip hop countdown show, right? But for me, and I think this says a lot about just not only with them two, but over the course of my career, and this is what my wife really is her one criticism of me, just as a person, and is that a lot of times when I have these opportunities to really bond and connect and establish just organic relationships with people, not because there's a potential, you know, not because there's a potential usage of that relationship, right?
Mm-hmm.
But just organically, you meet people, if you connect and build with them, then it happens.
Yeah.
If you don't, you don't. But she's like, you always have these opportunities and you kind of just overlook them.
Hmm.
So I think of Free and AJ amongst the never-ending list of all these people that I've met. You know, I always wonder that my Kanye session, right?
Yeah.
Meaning when I did finally work on my album, I asked myself, what would have happened if I was a little more proactive in actually building and connecting with him, because I didn't, which is why a lot of times now people, when they hear, you know, they like, yeah, yo, you did that song with Kanye.
Yeah.
And they're expecting this really extravagant, you know, Rick James Chappelle story of my time with Kanye in the studio, which there probably could have been, but it never manifested because I was too busy just sitting there like staring like, yo, I'm in the studio with Kanye. Right. So to his credit, I mean, not that he had to be extra like, yo, Jen, yo, let's just build for a second before we even talk music.
Right.
Nah, he was there. You know, to him, it was a job. And unless otherwise, that's what it would have been.
Sure.
So he's punching away at the MP on, you know, he's on the keyboard. He's like, yo, what do you think about this? He presses one key. And I'm like, yo, that's dope. Yo. And that's how my Kanye song came to life. Right. But that being probably one of the more prominent ones where throughout the years, I'm like, dang, what would have happened?
I mean,
I might be, you know, I might have been like one of the groomsmen.
You could have been
at
like
the big Kanye
Sci-Hi the Prince. Sci-Hi
the
Jints. No, that sounds good. Don't.
So when you finally sign to Rough Riders, and you have, you know, you're with D and Y, and this, do you know it's through Virgin, by the way, at that point?
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
At all. So their distribution deal is still through Def Jam, as far as you know, or Universal.
Well, I don't, you know, I can't say I didn't know, because those were things that I think were very important to me. And so Kay, at the time, is still my manager. And once again, to his credit, I think what was challenging but also just reality for us is both of us are just going with the flow as it comes, right? So once we locked in the Rough Rider deal, both of us had the same vision that this is, yo, this one makes the most sense of the three or four that we're talking to. Mm-hmm. And it made the most sense, I'm telling you. Like, as much as you're like, I don't know, Jin doesn't really fit the Double R mold, it made a lot of sense at the time.
Sure.
Because I think what Double R was also very reassuring about, and I think they stuck to it for the most part, was like, we just want you to do you. Right? Mm-hmm. Don't feel uncomfortable in thinking because the R is a certain way that we're bringing you and trying to mold you into that.
Right.
And I think they meant it when they said it, mm-hmm. and they pretty much adhered to it even as the years
went
by.
That's great.
Right? So, but along with that, what was tricky and challenging was that this was uncharted territory for everybody.
Right.
Right? So even with their, you know, immaculate record thus far, right? Yep. With Ride or Die Volume 1, X's multiple albums, Swiss, Eve, The Lox, whatever the case, this is uncharted territory, right? And there was so much hype and excitement and buzz. And I use the word hype now only recently, you know, with comfort, because I used to think that there would be like a negative thing attached to it. But as I got older and started reflecting more, I'm like, yo, I mean, not in terms of like, I felt like I was a victim to it, but meaning like, yo, I allowed myself to fall into it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's the best way I could say it. Yeah, and that's like the one thing I'm able to man up and own up to. But at the time, they're like renegotiating with Def Jam. They're renegotiating with Interscope and all these talks are going on. And there was just this feeling of like, well, I don't want to get caught up in the politics of this. So I'm signing to the R. Wherever my distribution comes from, it's going to be, at that moment, it wasn't a factor to me.
Yeah.
And I look back now and I'm like, maybe it should have been a factor to me, right? So here I am.
But first, also, what do you know at 20?
At 20, I don't know. You know, me and my manager, like I said, we're kind of going through the weather as it's unfolding. But then next thing you know, it did arrive at a point. And it's cool because a lot of times I listen back to some of the songs that I put out at that time, with little freestyle joints, or mixtape joints, and it so captures my mindset throughout these different phases.
Yeah.
Because there was one point where essentially I signed with Rough Riders like kind of maybe late 2001, early 2002. And the natural thought from the general public was like, yo, we're going to get that Jin album right away or right now or probably not too far down the line. It didn't come out till about 3 years later. It came out in 04.
Right.
And the question is, yo, why? And not only that, I think what was also like tricky was just these several release dates. It might have been better off if we just never set a release date and just let it linger, as opposed to I must have put out, like, between the day I got signed to when it finally came out, I must have put out like maybe 4 to 5 release dates until it finally came.
Right.
And I'm saying that to say maybe at a certain point people were just like, yo, you playing, Jin, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, and they don't care about the politics. They're just looking at it on at face value. It's
they're looking at those ads like every single month.
Every month. You buy, you buy like a Jadakiss album and inside it says Jin album coming soon.
Totally.
And it's like,
totally.
No, Jin album coming. But be quiet is kept behind the scenes. What's happening is everything we're talking about, which is just even the ultimate uncertainty of who's distributing my album.
Sure. Right.
And then you mentioned Virgin, which ended up being the marriage. So Rough Rider, Virgin, and I can only describe that as that one was tough. I can't even make it sound colorful.
Do you feel like, okay, so you go from the high point of signing with them, breaking out the chain, making this announcement, and these are guys, look, we all know their track record, they're on top of the world, and you're signing there and you're the next one up. For 3 years, do you feel, and they link up with Virgin, and that's a long, drawn-out process that, you know, like you said, a lot of release dates, a lot of, like, uncertainty. Mm-hmm. Where what's your mindset like? Do you feel like your opportunity at this point, you moved up to New York, you've made these dreams come true, and now they're taking it away from you?
Even in the midst of all the frustration and kind of, like, this feeling of angst, I always was able to maintain a level of optimism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that worked for me all the way until the album finally dropped. I think the album dropping, and also as it relates to the lackluster performance, I mean, yo, just to put it all out there, is when it really finally, it was almost like I was trying to hold it up as long as I could, but then when it dropped and it didn't live up to the aforementioned hype, is when it just all started unraveling. And even at that point, I tried to put up this facade as long as I could. But then, like a year or two after it, I couldn't. And it just, that's when it really took a toll on me, like on a real personal level.
Right.
And I've shared about this, you know,
in
interviews and stuff like that. And it's interesting because it's really only like maybe the last year or two that I've even been able to kind of open up these chambers about these things.
Yeah.
Well, it was hard at one point.
Yeah, it's got to feel like, you know, you're building your entire life towards this moment and then it's just...
Yeah. But then, you know, that there's several... I mean, I feel like my whole journey, life and career-wise, has just been a series of plot twists. And we may or may not get into it, but then it was like almost all these things had to happen that lead me to that led me to going to China in 08.
Yeah.
Right? Which is where, not like, and I say it like, not only did going out there breathe life into me, like, yo, just to be real, like, financially and career-wise.
Sure. Yeah.
But it was those 4 years out there that, man, I really grew as a person. You know, coming back and just seeing that... Dang, yo, number one, you've been on a crazy ride. And there was ups and downs. But still, you are one of the many super blessed people, you know, in this field, in terms of not just rap, but in entertainment, to where in some of the more unfortunate cases, you hear people who have these, you know, kind of disappointing career fallouts.
Yeah.
And, yo, they just fall victim to, a plethora of different things.
Well,
you know?
I think I strongly believe in the idea of one's journey,
mm-hmm.
right? And like, yeah, like there's ups and downs and there's strikes and gutters, you know?
Right.
But I think that if you don't go through those things, they don't make you into the person you are, right?
Totally.
Like, so we've been doing our stuff for 8 years and I feel like there's been lots of different developments and times when things are really exciting, times when things are boring. But like, I think that makes you into the person and people that we are. We have a specific, you know, voice and vision because of all those things that happened.
Bingo.
So I think the point that you've gotten to today, part of your journey was that Rough Riders roller coaster.
Yeah. Yeah. And, I've even had multiple times over the years, still to date, where I find myself kind of defending them. Not that they need my defending, mm-hmm. but meaning when I come across a comment in a Facebook message or in person, and, you know, their sentiment of the individual is, yo, man, but I don't know why Rough Riders did you like that. And I'm right away like, wait. Did me like what? They didn't do anything but give me a life-changing opportunity. And not for nothing, I think even behind the scenes, you know, and I love putting this stuff out there, yo, they went above and beyond in terms of like on some non-music-related stuff,
really?
Non-career-related stuff where they, you know, took me in ways. And you know, between DY and the countless amount of people that I've worked with and met with in the years that I was part of that label and that, yo, and you always hear people refer to Double R as a family. It is, yo. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even if, like, you're a Chinese kid from Miami, the moment you come in and you're like, yo, he's one of us, he's one of us.
That's
right?
Dope.
And in those several years that I was with them, not for one moment did I not feel that, right? Like, you get something, like, when you become part of Double R that, yo, not a lot of people get to experience. Like, just as an example, you know, you go to these different cities to do these shows, and because of the tie between the label and then like the bike club, right?
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And even the bike club, it's very family oriented. But the moment you arrive in Fayetteville, North Carolina, yo, the airport is like 65 Rough Riders out there with the vests. They making sure you get to the hotel.
Yeah.
They making sure you get there. And whether that's needed or not is a whole nother story. But it's like, yo, you carry that R, yo, we got you. Whatever it is, whether it's something simple. Or if it's not simple, we got you.
That's
right.
Awesome.
You know what I'm saying?
And do you still wear your chin?
I have it, but I don't wear it. I don't know. Who knows what will happen if I put it around my neck right now? Like, I may like transform into like, I don't know. I feel like that's like a Marvel Heroes origin story waiting to happen.
Well, you got bit by the spider.
Yeah, but something like whoever possesses that chain, like it might be like the Green Lantern ring.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's a little bit too much power right now.
Yeah. I mean, for all I know, I might try to keep it away from him, but then, like, you know, when I'm dead and gone, Chance finds it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Imagine that. Chance finds it. Now, all of a sudden.
That feels like The Mask.
The son of the mask.
Speaking of Rough Riders, how is your Ducati game? How is your Kawasaki game?
Horrible.
that might have been
the reason why my album didn't do what it was supposed to. Because, you know, people are like, yo, Jin, there's 1.3 billion Chinese people. You good, right? Mm-hmm. And being the young 22-year-old me, I'm like, word, I am good, right? Of course, they're all going to buy a copy.
Yeah.
Right? Probably two of them, right, each.
Yeah, yeah.
But maybe because they never saw me on a Ducati. All the videos that they ever saw, they didn't see me, you know, like doing a wheelie.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. might have to just stick with the bootleg.
They saw you in Too Fast, Too Furious.
Yeah. That was really mind-blowing, man.
Yeah, I'm sure. I mean, first of all, they had a bunch of rappers like trying out for roles for that.
Yeah.
You actually got one.
I got one.
Redman did not.
Did he try out for the sequel? Is that what he... I didn't hear about this.
He was supposed to get...
Ja Rule's role, could it be, in the first one?
Well, Ja Rule wanted to get Tyrese's part in the second one. Redman wanted Ludacris.
The inner workings of the Fast and the Furious universe that the world... Yeah. I didn't even know about this, and I thought I knew everything about the Fast and the Furious.
This is all on IMDb's trivia page. I'm not gonna act like I'm like... Talking to Neil Moritz or anything.
If anything, you know, Mr. Rule, he really set the
tone. Mr. Rule, sure.
Because he was in the first one. Mm-hmm. And that was like a big, because the first one is really the, you know, where it all starts.
Yeah.
Sure. And he had a pretty prominent role in that one as one of the racers.
Yeah, when he's like screaming like, Evercore! Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. But then the second one, the way it unfolded was, you know, once again, very Cinderella-like. I mean, at the time, they were working on it. And I was already a big fan of the Fast and the Furious universe. And then this was totally, it's totally a DNY Rough Rider connection, alley-oop, without a doubt. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had to, like, step up to the plate and execute. But they had a relationship with the director of that one, John Singleton.
Yeah, sure.
Who directed the second one. And it was like, yeah, we do have a role that we would love to have Jin, you know, come and cast audition for. Next thing you know, from that to I'm standing in a trailer in Miami reading for, you know, Mr. Singleton.
In Miami.
In Miami, which is where that one takes place.
You're back.
I'm back, yeah. And it's like,
they made you stand outside the gates. Y'all. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm like, y'all don't even, you know, I can stay at my old house. Yeah. And I'll just get the set by myself. You don't even need to give me
the urinal,
Uber.
You know?
After drinks at the urinal when we rap, right? That's when we rap on set, we'll go back to the urinal. But then I think now at this juncture right here, sitting amongst you guys, only am I starting to realize, man, what an awesome experience and opportunity that was, being in that the second Fast and the Furious. Because, you know, I mean, the franchise itself has taken on like this. It's like a phenomenon, right? Especially with the last one, Part 7. And then even, you know, like there's a tragedy, right, within it. And I think why it was so surreal is because of just you have all these people who grew up not just with the movies, but with these characters, right? Whether it's Vin's character, Paul Walker's character, and so forth. And then for me, it was also like a little extra surreal because I'm like, yeah, like even if I would have got casted for the third one, Tokyo Drifter,
which
I didn't, right? But
well, you're Chinese,
well, so no Chinese people in Tokyo. For once, we're gonna make it somewhat realistic, right? All the other movies, cool, but in Tokyo, we're sticking to, you know, reality. No Chinese people,
right?
But
they had like Bow Wow or something,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they're doing Bow Wow, but because there are Bow Wows in Tokyo.
Yo, and then Bow Wow took your shine at 106 and Park. I don't like this.
Wow. I don't like where this like is this. Going. But yeah, it was definitely a moment of like just appreciation for what, you know, Fast and the Furious as an entity played in just a lot of us growing up, watching these movies, attaching ourselves to these characters. So now with, like, the new one coming out that they've slated for 2017.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And Vin, you know, recently announced that I'm acting like I'm on a first-name basis with
him. I mean, why not?
Why not?
Why not?
And he announces, oh, we're going to be bringing the story to New York.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, I'm like, I'm here!
Yeah, you can stay in your place.
Jimmy is here!
And what are you doing on Twitter right now?
Oh, bring back Jimmy.
Bring back Jimmy.
That's kind of like, it's this very silly thing, but yo, I started this petition, and I got like 10,000 people to sign it, and I'm like, yo, I mean...
Bring it to China, though.
They're gonna want to see me peel off on a Ducati first, and I don't know if I can do that. So.
Listen, the what's her face? Devin Aoki, is that her name?
Yes.
She didn't know how to drive a car, and then
until that movie,
you could learn to ride a Ducati.
Here we go.
Yo, I'm down. I mean, yo, I'll learn how to make couscous if that'll bring Jimmy
back. That won't help.
I'm trying everything but riding a Ducati. Yeah. Okay.
When you were with Rough Riders, were you there the time when, was it D or Y who got into the accident?
D.
It was D on one of those
like a motorbike. Yeah.
With the three wheels.
It's called a T-Rex.
T-Rex.
Yeah. Yeah. I was there. And
what was that like?
Man, it really like, beyond it taking a toll on the label.
Yeah.
And like operations and whatnot. What was really tough was, kind of emotionally, I think it took a lot out of a lot of the, you know, not just the artists, but also everyone involved in that circle.
Yep.
And interestingly enough, the timing of it is when I first got signed, like in the initial days, he was still on the road to recovery. So meaning it was really a little bit after I got signed and I'm getting into the fold of Double R that he's coming back around into the circle.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was interesting because, you know, he, between him and Wah,
mm-hmm.
he was actually always the more musical focused one, and Wah was handling stuff up at the, you know, the Universal office,
yeah,
or,
right.
or, you know, where they were based in Midtown. So between the two, I got to function and interact with both in great ways. But yeah, with Wah, it was always like, yo, I got my hand, you know, I'm putting my foot on, you know, these necks of, you know, over at Virgin,
yeah.
over at wherever. But with D, it was always studio based,
yeah.
always like, yo, let me hear that verse that you got for that joint, you
yeah.
know, and we'll, you know, we'll link you up with Twista for one of the songs. And
amazing.
Here's the crazy thing: I got Twista on, and I always look at this like, if you want to summarize kind of my career, I got a song with Twista,
yep.
and I've never met Twista.
Really?
Yeah, I've never met Twista.
And you met wait. But you were in Chicago when you met
Southstar.
When you met Southstar.
Unless that was Twista in disguise. Man, he one hell of a disguise.
Man,
but yeah, nah. He you know, he bounced back, and I think it makes me really think about just how surreal it is to end up on a label that you grew up. Yo, because I remember when Rough Rider Cash Money that tour.
Oh my God,
was down in Miami, mm-hmm. and you know. Imagine what would have happened if I ended up on Cash Money.
Crazy.
Then your album never would have come out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
A few more Rough Riders things, yeah. if we could. Your album, you had, like we mentioned, you had Kanye, Just Blaze, Swiss Beats,
yeah.
and Wyclef on there.
I was just destined to not
no, but that's,
do big things. No.
But that's pretty incredible, though. Like,
it is.
Did you work in the studio with all of them?
Let's see. The sessions with Clef, yes.
Okay.
The sessions with Blaze, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The sessions with Kanye, yes. So I was in a studio with
But not Swiss.
Yes. Yeah, Swiss.
That would have been crazy.
No, like, that's what I was saying. I was like,
yeah, the sessions were all with all of them. And you know that thing I described about kind of that whole process with Kanye? I think it was the same thing.
That you weren't proactive
I wasn't proactive, and it wasn't so much that I was like disconnected from that place, but I think this also speaks a lot about just my mindset at that time, which is I'm thinking more short term than long term.
Right.
I'm thinking short term as in like quiet as kept while I'm in the session. I might have been thinking about, yo, we about to go to San Fran on Saturday for a show. Who do I know in San Fran? And I'm talking about, you know, like the girls, of
course.
Sure.
Right? Yeah.
40. Yeah. I'm like, yo, you know, because that was another thing, just being signed in those early days and still just caught up in, I use the word hype, but yeah, of it all, right? The hoopla.
You're 20. You're 21.
Yeah,
like,
so
of course.
It makes all the sense.
Yeah.
But
you had
this
your two-way. You were just
I had
like,
my two-way.
Wow. It was popping.
Wow. It was popping. And, you know, so whether it was the Kanye session or the Just Blaze session, and this is, I think, if there was one piece of wisdom that I could impart on, like, up-and-coming guys, whatever age you are, is just never underestimate those moments that you can really connect and bond with someone. Because I'm not saying that if I were to have been there and applied myself that me and Just Blaze would be BFFs, but I would like to think that there could have been some sort of like dialogue. Because if I look back on it now, I hate to say it like this, but it was more of a business transaction than anything else.
Sure.
And not because of Blaze
right.
or not because of Kanye.
Well, no, but you also like didn't know these people. Like, you're a friendly guy, but you know, you don't have to. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Like, I don't want to like paint the picture of like you being there and being like standoffish. Like, it's just it wasn't.
Like, if anything, I think in the Kanye session, we might have exchanged like 4 sentences. Now, with the Just Blaze, I mean, we probably did. We had at least 10 sentences.
Oh, well, that's
okay.
Between the two of us.
Well,
so.
I mean, how many sci-fi movies have you seen?
I was like, is that real low from, like, back in the days? Like, and he's like, yeah, you want to touch it?
Do you, have you seen any of those guys, like, in the years since? Have you run into any of them?
At a recent South by Southwest, probably, like, this year, earlier on, I was able to witness Just Blaze versus Manny Fresh at that beat battle.
Oh, my God.
That was mind-blowing.
Yeah, no
and,
kidding.
I mean, I didn't get to really, like, chat with Just Blaze, but got to go up and say what's up to both of them.
That's awesome.
And Manny showed a lot of love, too, actually.
That's, like, everyone
like,
says he's the
like,
best.
Rough Riders.
Rough Riders, nah. Like, DMY haven't crossed paths with them, like, for many, many years now. Artist-wise, let me think. Have I ran into any one of them? Swiss, kiss. Nah, not really. I still follow all of the stuff. Yeah.
Of course, which is the crazy
thing, you know.
In the midst of all the hype, like at its height.
Yeah.
Who was the most fascinating person to come up to you and be like, "Yo, I saw you on TV and I'm fucking with this movement."
Okay. Not to that extent and not in detail like that, but the one that I will always remember. I'll tell you the scenario first before I say who it was.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was in Puerto Rico at one of those. They do these annually, like these mixed show.
Yeah, the summit.
I want to guess after you like do it the whole thing. Okay.
Hotel lobby.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going R. Kelly.
Yeah.
Oh, hell no. I mean, I don't mean that hell no in a malicious, I hate R. Kelly hell no. But as in, nah, the one who I'm going to say trumps Mr. Kelly.
Yeah.
And just because they're in completely different universes.
Yeah.
If I was like, yo, guess who is the R&B king that really rocked me when we crossed paths? No, so it's not R. Kelly. Hotel lobby. I'm going One Direction. Him and his entourage are going in other direction. Here's the number one clue, and the two of you will probably know this as soon as I give the clue. When I saw him and his entourage, I was like, wow, they are pretty brave. All right. Oh, so you guys know already before maybe the listeners right? Yeah. So I was like, wow, they do look pretty brave in real life, right?
Yeah.
So we cross paths. I'm in awe. I'm dumbstruck. I'm just in awe struck, dumbfounded. We cross paths. And I couldn't muster up anything to say anything. I'm just basking in his presence. We finally cross. Within four steps, I actually hear him turn back. I'm like, hey, yo. And I turn back. I'm like, yo, what's up? And it's a simple pound. Yo, just keep doing your thing, yo. You
know That's what awesome.
I mean? Like, keep doing your thing. And we part ways, right?
Nas.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very brave.
Oh.
Yeah. A lot of heart.
Yeah.
Very brave.
That's
tons,
awesome.
Tons of heart.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing that I've pondered between then and now is like, I really, really, really hope he didn't think I was South Star.
I don't think that Nas would be like, hey, I love that one song that you have.
No, hey, don't try to belittle that one song. Yeah. It was a big song for them.
It was a big song, but not for
South Star, right?
Also, but it was also
by Rob Kempman, by the way.
Really?
Because
that was also a big song for Ja Rule.
It's the same beat.
Same beat, yeah.
Yeah, it's like Mesmerizer.
Mesmerize, that was a good song too.
Great song.
But so he was just like, yo, keep doing your thing. And we parted ways and didn't cross, you know, we have yet to see each other. But only about 3 days ago, after years and years and years and years of not really addressing it, I decided to publicly announce my top five. And it dawned on me that he sits pretty definitively at the top spot, yo.
Even Nas. Though your life's a bitch is way better than his.
I didn't even make that connection.
No, you just want the fans to. You want the fans to.
Yo, yeah. He's sitting up there because I had this super intense kind of powwow with some junior high school friends. I was down in Miami a couple of days ago, and along with just catching up with, you know, old childhood friends,
sure.
Mm-hmm. We opened the Pandora's box, you know, top fives. Come on, let's do it. And I've always been super ambiguous and vague with my answers. Like, it depends what type of mood I'm in that day.
Yeah.
Is this an augmented top five?
Right.
Like, are there any like prerequisites? But that night, I was just, I don't know, something just compelled me, and I was like, yo, I'm gonna give y'all my five.
You were like cannabis.
Yeah.
He's there.
Wow.
He's there. He's there. In my definitive top five.
Have you
five.
Ever worn silver paint?
No, I haven't.
And is this Nas after it was written?
Well, I said him just in terms of like entire body. So okay, I didn't specify to a certain period Nas.
Wait, now I want to hear the rest of your top
if
five.
If I take it was written Nas, I gotta take Nostradamus Nas.
Of course, you know? Yeah, gotta, sure.
If I want
just the whole,
yeah.
Yeah, if
the
I
whole
wanna
catalog.
Take, if I want to take I Gave You Power, I gotta take Shawty.
Yeah,
say
oh yeah.
What's your price? Which is great too.
Yeah, great
so,
song.
So you want the five, I'll give you five. So
okay.
it was interesting because Nas sits definitively at the top.
Mm-hmm.
The other four, you know, nondescript.
Right.
It could be anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Cannabis was in there.
Sure.
M was in there.
Yep. Okay.
Hove was in there.
Yep.
And then the fifth one.
Gin.
A tricky one. No.
Oh.
Early in the evening, I had Black Thought there.
Okay.
Early in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
After a little bit of lingering and dust settling, I had to retract it. And they actually gave me hell. Like, hey, no amendments, man. No amendments. And I was like, I haven't seen y'all in like 6 years. Give me one amendment. And I say this like kind of half remorsefully and half like, no, I had to make this change. I had to retract Black Thought out.
And you put in Ludacris.
No, I had to put Lauryn Hill in there.
Okay.
Okay.
So, all right.
Yeah, because we started talking about like the Fugees and da-da-da, and it just dawned on me. And really, just to add on to that, this final tidbit, my list is composed of, you know, because when people compose lists, they think of various factors. They think of performance, you know, sales performance. Yep. They think of body of work. All I got to say that probably for my top five, my first thing is I'm going with which five MCs have made an impact on me.
Sure.
On that's just good. Like an emotional connecting yeah. level.
Right. That's why I'm saying you should have put Ludacris. He was your friend in Too Fast, Too Furious.
But he wasn't in part 3, 4, 5, 6, or 7.
Well, that's because
he might come back in the list if, you know, he makes some magic happen for part 8. He'll be sitting there with Lauren and Slim and, you know, the rest of the crew. But Nas sat definitively up there on the top. Yeah. Like, man. Particularly that It Was Written album, man.
Do you think it's fair? Do you think it's fair? I was thinking about this today, and I was saying this to Jeff. Maybe I think you just hit too early. Like as far as a career, like
yeah.
honestly,
yeah.
Like I read somewhere that you said, you know what? I think it was your New York Times piece, which was written by
Ta-Nehisi Coates.
Yes, which is pretty amazing.
That is, yeah, early on in his journey too.
Yeah,
amazing writer.
That's unbelievable. Yeah. New York Times Magazine. I think it was that piece when you said, you know, I'm aiming for an audience that may not be exactly who Jay is talking to, right?
Yeah.
Where Jay-Z, you know, you're like, I can't imagine that trip to the Amalfi Coast, right?
Yeah.
I can't imagine, like, the cars he drives. Like, I just live in a different sort of tax bracket, yeah. right? I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
And that sounded a lot to me like Kanye. Mm-hmm. And you see who he's appealed to and how that has like driven his
yeah,
career.
Yeah,
not
yeah.
saying that you guys are the same at all
yeah.
or that you have the same.
I would say you guys are the same.
but similarly, you were going for like an audience that was different, right?
Yeah.
That sort of like maybe that suburban audience that sort of had a different viewpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever think about like maybe you hit a little too early?
I've always been told, and you know, there was one point where people, man, this warms my heart. People would come up to me and to some degree offer their condolences as well as offer their insights and kind of words of comfort. It's like, yo, man, it wasn't you. It wasn't lack of skill. It was this, that, and the third. And in this case, what you're bringing up, one thing people would always say is that the timing of it.
Right.
It's like, yo, man, you was ahead of you, you know, like, and timing-wise, if you would have came out at a different time. And as much as that warms my heart, I arrived at a point where I was just like, you know what? Thank you for that gesture. But I don't think it was anything. I think it was just... That's it. All unfolded exactly how it was supposed to.
Okay,
it was written.
Yes, it was written. And, you know, and because if I were to look back and weigh the ups and downs,
mm-hmm.
the hot, you know, and kind of all of these things combined, I still think that things worked out more than they didn't work out.
Yeah,
you know, because you know, and I can kind of like venture off into a bunch of stuff. You know, I mean, all the career stuff aside. I mean, I sit here now. Yeah, I got married like mm-hmm. 4 years ago. I have a 3-year-old. And above all else, I mean, I have my peace of mind, which
yeah.
I think, you know, from those 7 weeks onward, it may have appeared like I was sitting on top of the world, but I don't think I've ever felt the peace that I feel now.
That's dope.
And that maybe had to do with just having this supposed dream kind of like shattered,
mm-hmm.
only to see that, wow, what you thought was the dream scenario was actually just like a bubble that you were living in.
Right.
And then now I get to really appreciate and embrace what my reality is now.
Your parents, well documented, they weren't really fans of hip hop and your the idea of you getting into hip hop.
You know who they love though? My friend Mano. Which Chinese parents don't love my, you know, their friend, you know.
Wait,
any Chinese
how?
Parents who has a kid that is a friend of Mano, those parents are lucky, okay?
Like, I just want to know, if your parents were skeptical of hip-hop, what do they think of this comedy career?
Yeah, well, my dad has been very... We've been having a cool dialogue about it. He knows that I embarked on it several mm-hmm. months back. And like any Chinese dad, he's offering me jokes.
Okay.
You know, he's like, you know, you could talk about... You know, and, you know, talk about this and know about that. But, you know, and moms... Yo, moms is cool. Moms is like... Even before the, you know, embarking on the comedy, as far as my music goes, many, many years ago. And not only just because, oh, I finally signed a deal and made something of myself, but because I think she's the one that fronted me the, you know,
sure.
the money at first, right?
Yeah.
For my first run. She arrived at that point where she saw how much I loved it. and now it's so cool where we get together for dim sum or whatever it may be, and she'll say, you know which song I really like? And she'll reference some song, some obscure song of mine that probably never even saw the light of day.
I wanted you to tell a story that you've already told, but like 10 years ago, which is of your dad shopping for mixtapes on Canal Street.
Wow, did that? Wow, see, that's a
Do you even
one.
Know that story, or do I can tell you the story.
Yo, give it to me.
Okay,
but
so
now,
basically, it's that when you were first coming out, your dad went down Canal Street looking for your CDs.
Uh-huh.
That's it. I just thought that there was more to that.
That sounds...
You told to
was
like
it a
NPR or something.
Or he was looking for my album.
I believe it was your mixtape.
Right. Well, in recent years, in regards to my dad, it's cool. I mean, the one moment that I knew that this man has finally officially turned a new leaf is when he was like, have you heard that new Busta Rhymes song? And I think he was talking about...
Wait, your parents are like up on...
Yo, he was, and I think he was talking about, he was like, yeah, I heard it on the radio. I think it's Busta Rhymes. And I, you know, here's the which one. He's like, you know, at one part, he's like rapping really loud. And then like really all of a sudden, he starts rapping very low. Like,
Yeah.
We all know which one. Yeah. But if you take that same thing and apply it to just me having this conversation with this 55-year-old Chinese man.
Yeah.
But he don't know the lyrics, and he don't know that he knows it's Busta Rhymes.
Right.
And he know that for 8 bars. It's and then we come in the club every time, and then the flip mode, and you know, and then he's like, but then he goes really low and get low.
No, it's the
Papoose on it,
the remix for Swiss Beats,
But so well, that was definitely a pivotal moment.
How about when you had your son?
Oh, yeah,
I mean, that had to be like, because they always love like having grandchildren,
absolutely.
Like the idea, like. I feel like people soften up at that point,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely. That really changed their perspective on a lot of things. They're good. They're healthy. They're doing well. And
I'm going to tell your story for you.
Okay. I found it?
Is this a direct quote right now?
Yeah. Pops was walking up and down Canal Street. He was looking for DJ Cool Kid Part 6 and Part 7.
Hood Legends.
DJ Boom.
Yeah.
Anything that had me on it. You know, on Canal Street, the heaven of mixed CDs and bootleg CDs. My dad, this middle-aged Chinese guy, he's like 40-something, still thinking he's like 25. That's broken English.
Yes.
He'll understand you if you're talking to him, but you can't really hold a conversation well. So picture him walking up and down Canal Street, going to the mixtape spots, talking about, hey, there's this Chinese kid that raps. Do you have the cool kid? Then he told me this one story, right? You know, the African guy. The African guy is like, yeah, I got this one right here. My dad bought it already. He was like, I got 7. I need 6. Hilarious. He told me they were playing Hey Jin at one mixtape spot, your song.
Yes,
and
Hey
he
Jin.
Was telling the mixtape guy, I know that guy right there. I know that guy. But yeah, bottom line, they're real supportive now.
They are now. Hey Jin.
How good is that?
What's up? I know you guys are, you know, Uber Dipsetters. So
Yeah.
I was too. Who wasn't?
Yep.
But that Hey Jin was actually like, at that time that I did it, like that ended up becoming one of like, you know, if you were to like gather up all the Jin fans over the years, and you did a poll, right? That would definitely be in the top 5. Like,
it was in the best of Jin.
It was best of Jin covers. Yeah. Like, I remember. I mean, when I found the instrumental to that, I was like, "Yo, come on!" It wrote itself.
Yeah.
Hey Jin, what's up? You fly. And then I don't know what I said at the end. I'm gonna take you home tonight, or something like that. And then I did both. Like, I rapped from my perspective and from Juel's perspective, which was cool. So it was like,
it was conceptual.
Okay, so now you have this comedy thing going on.
Yeah.
You're playing Gotham Comedy Club pretty regularly.
Gotham is like, you know, they always, I've been reading and studying up on this, you know, this craft and just really absorbing it up heavily in the last 6 months. And one thing is like, if you're an aspiring up and comer, you want to find like these, you know, kind of places where you can really call your home and hone, you know, what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And Gotham has kind of been like the place that I've really been able to do that. And it was really through, there's this one guy who's actually acting like a mentor figure.
Dope.
And he is one of the main bookers there.
Mm-hmm.
Hence why, you know, he every now and then he'll just be like, I have this night, you know, I get you 6-7 minutes and, you know, spread the word, tell your friends to come. So it's really cool because what really was endearing to me was at one point he was like, yo, every now and then when I call you for these, don't tell anybody you know to come. Just come and rock for this crowd that's there tonight.
Right. Yeah.
And that way you can kind of gauge.
Yeah,
because like,
you don't want all bringers.
All bringers. And, you know, and when he said that, I was like, so you do care more than just, you know, that $12 entry and 2-drink minimum, right? You know what I mean? Which, not that I ever suspected him of that. But when he was like, yo, I, you know, I'm giving you, you know, you got the slot, but just come and do it. Don't call anybody.
Yeah.
That spoke a lot to me. So yeah. I was like, okay, if he can kind of, you know, bring that to the table, then I want to commit to them too. So, yeah. I mean, when I do know that I want to bring some people out to a show,
yep.
I probably do it at Gotham. And, you know, that's been a cool place. But outside of Gotham, there's like three or four other ones that I kind of try to hit up regularly.
Yeah.
Even when they do the bringer type show.
Sure. Yeah.
And, I mean, I look at those bringers as nothing more than just paying dues. And
of course.
It's
of course.
Both like, I mean, yo, this is a functioning establishment. They got to keep the lights on and the bills on.
For sure.
The bills paid. And then it also allows me not only to just perform for the 6-7 people that I've invited.
No, but for
but
fans.
Yeah, for the other 15, 20, 30 that are there,
sure.
that don't know gin from a hole in the wall either. So,
yeah. But you got a couple shows coming up.
Yeah,
that people should really be at.
Yeah, I've been really contemplating, you know, kind of how I wanted to cap this year off. And one thing was really producing, like self-producing and self-organizing a kind of like a feature show.
Yeah.
Because leading up to this, you know, I've been hitting up these open mics and doing these 6-7 minutes here and there. But I was like, yo, man, how dope would it be to just be able to rock for like half an hour? And I was able to get this really dope venue as well. Like not a comedy club, but like a theater style setting.
Yep.
So I'm putting together this half hour show, which I'm taping. So essentially, I'm taping my first half hour show, whatever that means, right? And it's happening on November 2nd.
Okay.
And it is definitely a very themed event. So I'm doing two shows that night. One is called Nas.
Yes.
The Nas Show.
Okay.
Which stands for, of course, NAS, the letters that spell Nas. So it has nothing to do with him. This NAS stands for No Asians Specifically.
Right.
So, essentially, Asians aren't allowed. Yeah. I don't know if there's a nice way to put that. However,
there's probably a better way to put it. Yeah.
And then that'll be like that's the 10 p.m. show. And then the 9 p.m. show is the NBA show.
Okay.
And not because, you know, like I'm a avid, you know, basketball fan.
Okay.
That NBA stands for nothing but Asian. But, well, on top of that, I didn't realize it until this illustrious conversation with you guys. But it is a way for me to pay homage to Nas.
No, it is.
Right? To go with the Nas, specifically. The Nas for the Nas show.
Your friend down from Puerto Rico.
Yes, my friend down.
Yeah.
Yes. But hey, if he does a walk through that night.
Well, he's invited to that. I mean, he's allowed to come to that show.
If he wants to go to the Asian show,
he can do either one.
Yo, if Nas wants to come to the NBA show, nothing but Asians, he's more than welcome.
Can he do
he
like
is
a...
the Afrocentric Asian, half man, half amazing. So hey, you're good. I don't even need to see like a printout of his family tree.
Right.
So I'm doing these two shows, and the inception of the idea actually started at a place where I think comedy really thrives, at the barbershop.
Yeah.
And me and my barber and, you know, two of the other barbers were talking about Asians and comedy, kind of the relation between the two, and essentially really exploring, you know, do Asians really have a type of sense of humor that is similar to anyone else's? Are they more reserved? Are they not, right? And that made me think, like, well, what if I did the same set for all Asian crowd, but then did one where there's no Asians at all, just to see kind of like what that would look like or how that would feel. Because, yeah, even this is something that would be interesting to share with you guys. In the course of the 6 months that I've been doing this, I have found certain times where I see that I am performing for a predominantly Asian crowd.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It even acts as kind of like a safety net for me, I feel
sure,
like.
Right.
Because one, I'm like, all right, well, you know, it's kind of like I'm playing a home field advantage right now.
Yeah, yeah.
You
right.
know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, so with this thing on November 2nd, it is like a way for me to just explore all these things. And I mean, at the core of it, it's really just wanting to have a night of fun. It's definitely rooted more in trying to show unity than division, even though it's clearly causing division. Because I got an email that was like, so I'm Chinese, but my boyfriend's Puerto Rican. So one should we go? I'm like,
you were like, you guys need to break up. It gives them something to talk about after the show.
Bingo!
Social experiment.
So, you know, so in effect, I'm actually healing relationships.
Wow. Look at you. Look at you.
But yeah, they can hit up anybody that's interested. It's a free show.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to do that because
Both
shows are free. No, I'm only charging the Asians.
No, non-Asians. Are you kidding?
But I was fortunate enough to get a venue sponsored. And the moment that I know that the venue is going to be sponsored, I'm like, okay, I have zero overhead, essentially. So I want to create and capture the experience more than look at it as, you know, like a revenue generating thing.
Yeah.
But t-shirts will be available.
Yeah.
Now they gotta be.
Okay, wait. So where can people find the information for that?
They can, well, I've been kind of tweeting and posting about it on my IG and Twitter, but the email that you should hit up, Nas, N-A-S.
Yep.
Versus vsnba@gmail.com.
Okay.
I have one question.
Yeah, we good.
You were signed to Rough Riders. You put out the song Learn Chinese. Yes, did any of your Rough Rider family members, did you ever teach them Chinese?
There's one that comes to mind. It was in a session. One of my favorites. Still one of the dopest. I would even put him and his compadre. I tweeted this the other day. Yo, super dope hip hop 1-2 combos, right? And then of course there's Outkast, there's Mos and Quali, and you know, Lil Fame, Dance, whatever.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Undoubtedly, Kiss and Styles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Even though they're technically part of a 3-man group, we're talking 1-2 combos.
Yes. Yes.
You got to put them. Styles. It was in a session. He's working on his verse for a song on my album called Karaoke Night. So I would like to think that no one else has gotten a 16 from Styles on a song that has anything to do with karaoke. But I remember him asking me vividly, yo, how you say weed in Chinese? And I'm just like, Dai Ma. The next thing you know, he has a line in there. He says something along the lines of, catch me with Jin downtown with them Chinese stars. Dai Ma like a muff, high off lot. And his pronunciation was spot on. So.
Yo, you know what?
Kudos to him.
You know what I think we should do, the three of us? We should run up to the Bronx and go to Juices for Life and surprise him one time.
Totally. And bring him some Daima.
Yeah.
Yo. You'll be responsible for that portion.
Jin, we so appreciate you coming through. This was dope.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Yeah, and we'll see you soon.
Yeah,
and
you guys come
on November 2nd.
Yeah. November 2nd.
I'm gonna come to the Asian one.
Yep. Absolutely. Yep. Yeah, I'll go to the other one. We'll compare notes afterwards. Yo, Jin, thanks so much for doing this.
Peace out.